Calling all podcast fans, Spotify makes it easier than ever to discover new shows to love. Get personalized episode recommendations and easily preview them before you dive right in. Find exclusive video episodes from your favorite hosts and guests. And with some, you can even connect with them through polls and Q&A directly within their episodes. It's everything you want in one app. So what are you waiting for? Try the podcast experience today on Spotify.
You've reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Please leave your message after the B-E-E-P.
Hi there. My name is Melina, and I am an avid Scrabble player. And I'm always wondering, how did they come up with the Scrabble point system? Who decided how many letters get in the Scrabble box? I'm really interested in this question, and I think ELT can help me figure that out. Thanks.
Hello?
Hey, Melina, it's Flora from ELT.
Hi, Flora.
Okay, so spell out your relationship with Scrabble for me.
So I love words and word games. I've always loved them, even as a kid. Actually, when I was 10, I read the entire dictionary.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I did. I took it with me everywhere that summer.
Help me picture it. Were you at the pool, the beach? Set the scene.
So this is me, 10 years old, just hanging out outside. It's hot as hell. I'm under a tree trying to get some shade. And I've probably got sweet tea that my mom has made. Of course, I'm a Southern girl. And I've got my dictionary, and I'm just checking out words. You know, I also used to write down my favorite words. So I also had like a little notebook that I carried around as well.
Do you remember any of the words you wrote down?
Yes. One of my favorite words at the time was phallic. I was like obsessed with the pH sound. And so when I realized I could use it in like, you know, regular context to describe things that were not necessarily, you know, sexual in nature, I just thought that was like the funniest thing ever as a kid.
I love that it was your favorite word for the most pure reasons.
It was. It was very pure. I was like, you know, young and being like, I know I can whip this word out.
So to speak.
So to speak. Exactly.
So you are a true word lover.
Yes, I do love them. Like, I remember when the first time I played Scrabble, I was like, this is so cool. I can, like, rack up points for putting words down. Like, this is amazing. Scrabble was, like, the it game for me.
How often do you play now?
You know, 1 to 2 games a week. I actually have a partner who, God bless him, like, he's grown to love the game.
Is there a reigning champion in your house?
We are nearly tied.
You're a perfect match.
I know, right? It is. It's great.
So what do you want to know?
I am really interested to know more about the history of Scrabble and how the game was created. When the mastermind sat down to create this game, how did they come up with how many tiles you pull or the point distribution on the letters?
Basically, how did this iconic game come to be?
Yeah.
Okay, so we found just the person to fill in the blanks.
I'm the author of Word Freak, Heartbreak, Triumph, Genius, and Obsession in the World of Competitive Scrabble Players. And I'm a competitive Scrabble player.
This is Stefan Fatsis.
Hey, Melina.
Hi, Stefan.
So, Melina, you called about Scrabble's origin story and how it shook out. Stefan says the story begins in the early 1930s.
Scrabble was invented by an out-of-work architect named Alfred Butz during the Depression. He had been laid off from his job and was sort of groping around for something to do. And he had this idea that during these hard times, people may want something to distract them. And maybe I could invent a game.
How fitting. I'm like, everybody should jump into Scrabble right now.
I know. Sounds very familiar.
Yes.
But Butz wanted his game to be different from what was available. So he surveyed the games that were out there to try to find holes in the market.
He broke down games into men on a board games was one category. Numbers games using dice or cards was another category. And the third category was word games. And Butz decided that there weren't any good word games.
And Butz was like, I can fill that open space. So he started working on a Scrabble prototype. The game had tiles with letters on them, but there was no board. Like, picture bananagrams.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty cool. I didn't realize it started out like that.
Yeah. In fact, a lot of Scrabble's fundamentals got worked out in this early version of the game. From the draw, Butts wrestled with one of your big questions. How many of each letter to include?
And that was a really important question to ask, because if you got it wrong and you're playing a game and suddenly you've got a preponderance of vowels on your rack all the time, or a preponderance of consonants, well, then it wasn't fun.
Hard to make phallic without a PH, you know?
Exactly.
So to figure out letter distribution, Butts turned to statistical analysis.
He literally opened up the pages of the New York Times and the Saturday Evening Post and the New York Herald Tribune.
And he started tallying letters, the 1-2-3s of the ABCs.
He created these giant spreadsheets on architect's paper with columns for each letter and columns for word lengths. And he would count the number of letters on each page.
Oh, my God. That's, like, extremely tedious. I love that.
I mean, it kind of reminds me of you as a 10 or 11-year-old reading the dictionary, trying to create your own little database.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was this really very detail-oriented approach toward trying to create a game that was accurate, that accurately reflected the language.
But he didn't want it to be too accurate. Take S's, for example. You can put an S on almost anything to make a new word. So Butts took some S's out to make the game harder.
That totally makes sense, but I cannot tell you how many times I've wished that I had an extra S. There's only four of them in that damn bag.
Well, that was Butts' gift or curse to you.
Definitely a curse.
Butts isn't solely to blame. He actually borrowed this alphabet tallying idea from another man of letters.
His inspiration was an Edgar Allan Poe short story called The Gold Bug, which was about solving a cipher. And that it included a line where Poe guessed what the frequency of letters in the English language was.
Wow, I feel more and more connected to Scrabble right now. Like, I really like Edgar Allan Poe. I have, like, the complete book of his works at home and actually have read that story.
So Butts had his game worked out and he came up with a sexy name, Lexico.
Oh yeah.
And then he unveiled his game to the world. And over the course of a few months, he sold 84 sets.
The game didn't take off.
It was a FLOP.
So Butts gives up.
Oh no. So how do we get Scrabble?
Good question. When we come back, the word starts getting out. Over the next decade, Alfred Butts goes back to working as an architect, but he kept tinkering with his game. He added a board and double and triple word and letter scores, and he tweaked the points, which is something you were curious about, right?
Yeah, specifically, what's the rationale behind what letters are assigned what point value?
Butts had a system for this, too. The rarer the letter, the more points he assigned. Z's and Q's got 10, and the ELT's got one apiece. He tried a new name, Crisscross Words.
God, no.
I know. Unlike the name, the game kept getting better. But it didn't take off until a guy named James Bruneau got his hands on the game. He was a Washington bureaucrat looking for something to do in his retirement.
Bruneau plays it and thinks this is good, and he reaches out to Alfred Butts and he says, could I give a crack at trying to sell this thing?
Butts gave him that crack, and Bruneau dived in and made a key contribution. Can you guess what it is?
Perhaps a name change?
Bingo.
Like a bureaucrat to show up and, do the bare minimum. There we go.
He changes the name from Crisscross Words to Scrabble because he liked the way the word sounded and nothing else had been named Scrabble.
And it just came out of thin air?
Yeah.
Scrabble?
Basically out of thin air. He liked the way the word sounded and what it meant. It means to grope or claw at something. And he thought that sounded like fun and it sort of reflected what the game was about.
So Bruneau starts marketing it. And the legend is that the chairman of Macy's played the game, liked it, and told one of his buyers to stock it. And the game scored big. Sales went through the roof, from a few thousand games sold in 1952 to nearly 4 million sold a couple years later.
Wow. talk about a takeoff.
It is an absolute cultural phenomenon all over television and in magazines and newspapers. Celebrities are playing it. They're being photographed in glossy magazines playing Scrabble. Everybody wants the game.
But Scrabble's success didn't spell Mega Millions for its creator.
Alfred Butz had signed a royalty deal with Bruno, 2.5 cents per set.
Man, 2 cents per set? I mean, I know they sold a lot, but man, he gave up a ton, like, just for the name.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, he also gets this amazing legacy, though.
That part Butz did not anticipate.
Alfred Butz could not believe any of it.
Butz thought he'd invented a fun distraction, a family-friendly word game to play in the den. But for some people, Scrabble becomes something else, an obsession. Soon after the game took off, Scrabble tournaments emerged, and along with them, elite players who would do just about anything to win.
Very quickly, players realized that you could go through the dictionary and learn more words than your opponent. And the very, very best Scrabble players have committed to memory 80 to 90% of the 200,000 or so 2 to 15 letter words that are acceptable in the game. And certainly they have committed to memory all of the 2 through 8 letter words that are acceptable in the game, which is over 100,000 of those.
Okay, so I have commitment issues, and so that seems like a lot of work, but that's pretty impressive.
I mean, this is what was so striking to me. The game looks really different if you're a super Scrabbler. Like, the best players don't actually need to love the language the way that you do. They don't even necessarily need to know how to speak it.
A few years ago, the 5-time North American champion and 5-time now world champion, a guy named Nigel Richards, decided that English wasn't enough. So over the course of like 9 weeks, he memorized the French Scrabble word list and won the French National Scrabble Championship. He didn't speak any French.
Oh my God. That's crazy. But also, you just dropped the bomb because the French language has their own Scrabble. Like, I need to know about these other Scrabble languages.
Yes, Scrabble is available in a few dozen different languages, and some editions may be easier to master than others. For example, American Scrabble has around 200,000 playable words.
Other languages, though, are more complicated because of the way words are inflected. So French has like 386,000 or more playable words. Icelandic? Oh my God, Icelandic is insane. Icelandic is like 2.3 million words.
Oh my God, that's amazing. I don't know anything about the Icelandic language, so that sounds pretty cool. I feel like now I need to go do some research on why they have so many words.
Yeah, maybe your next dictionary to buy.
I don't know. That seems like a hard one to kind of master on my own.
Okay, if you're not ready to get into Icelandic Scrabble, here's a tip for English language Scrabble. If you want to up your game, there is a doable, toable place to start.
AABADAEAGAHAIALAMANARASATAWAXAYBABEBIBO.
You want to level up, start memorizing the 100 or so 2-letter words you can play.
That's awesome. I didn't know about a few of those A ones, like AR. I didn't know that that would have been acceptable, but I love a good AH.
Do you?
I do. I play that one all the time. That was one of the first ones that I learned was like a good doozy to throw out to people. I remember the first time that I like played it with a peer and they were like, that's not even a real word. And I was like, yes, it is. Like, it's the one of the first things in the dictionary. Open it.
Thank you for calling with this question.
This is super, super fun. I appreciate it.
Before we go, I have a request. I want to hear your most embarrassing story. Like the story that makes you shake your head and cast your eyes down at the floor when you think about it. The story that makes you cringe, and laugh many years later. Maybe it was the time you called your boss daddy, or when you gave that big presentation with a popcorn kernel stuck in your teeth, or when you accidentally brushed lips with your partner's mom in a hug that went very wrong. Here's one of mine. After I graduated from college, I moved to New York, and my job, my first real full-time job, sent me to a conference, and I felt very adult. Here I was in Midtown Manhattan. I was wearing my most business professional outfit, a skirt and tights, and I was about to meet my two best friends, my roommates from college. So I'm walking out of this conference on 34th Street. I'm on a three-way call with my friends on my flip phone. We're talking about where to meet. I'm like very proudly relaying my extremely professional big day. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling very Sex in the City. I mean, this is the early 2000s. When I hear this woman, I don't know, maybe half a block behind me, calling out, "Stop, wait, wait." And I told my friends, like, there's this woman behind me, she's calling out, I hope everything is okay. And I try to get out of the way because this woman is power walking, like right in my direction. But she keeps veering towards me. Eventually she catches up to me and she taps me on the shoulder and I turn around startled and very loudly, like so loudly that two best friends on a flip phone could easily hear, she says, "Your skirt is tucked into your tights and it has been for the last three blocks." As you might imagine, my friends loved it, and my butt was the butt of a lot of jokes that night. So, ELT listeners, here's my question to you. Can you beat that? What is your most embarrassing story? Call us and tell us. 833-RING-ELT. 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Caitlin O'Keefe, Stephanie Werner, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just. Scored by Bobby Lord, Emma Munger, and Dara Hirsch. Mixed by Dara Hirsch. ELT is a Spotify original podcast. MANORROBOT. Goodbye.